You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
I see dead people.
All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it! My life has value!
Filmmaking Conversations with Damian Swaby is part of the critical conversations currently taking place across the film community. The podcast reaches out to the next generation of filmmakers who continue to look for inspiration and guidance. Remember to hit the subscribe button and leave a comment in the comments section. Share the podcast with friends and family, and have a great day. And now, over to the host of the show, Damian Swaby.
Steve, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing good, Damian. Thank you for having me.
Good. Thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it. I was lucky enough to see your showreel, and I thought, aha, this guy's got some shots I wanted to take on a project that I wasn't able to. And I've seen some other stuff in it that I like. So I want to speak to you about your showreel and being a cinematographer. Cool. So I'm right by saying you're from Kansas originally.
Yes, I am.
And from what I'm aware, from how much I know one person in Kansas that got into film. But traditionally, it's not a place where many people make films, or is it a place people become of the arts and then go to a different city to make films?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like increasingly changing. Like, more people are kind of building the art community out there now, just, you know, with the rise of the internet, and kind of this younger generation is, you know, really growing and kind of, you know, trying to build communities like where they're planted, which is really exciting. So, you know, I love going back to Kansas. There was a period of time I didn't like it, but now every time I go back, I'm like, dang, like, why did I leave again? But yeah, I mean, I was like the only kid growing up that I think like really took making films very seriously. Cause it started when I was like 13, and it must've been like 2007 or so, like YouTube was getting a little more popular. And, you know, my friends and I were like, that looks like a lot of fun. So we started running around with, you know, our family's video cameras and just, you know, kind of making like home movies and like little sketches that were just like completely improvised. But I always was like trying to take it a step further, and I started writing out scripts. And then in high school, I was able to join my video productions class, and I did that my last 3 years of high school. And, you know, I just kept creating like more elaborate short films. Most of which were pretty bad, but, you know, occasionally some of them were actually like kind of good. But yeah, I was like really kind of the only person I knew of like in my school that really kind of like took the hobby a little bit more into kind of like the passion space, and then decided, okay, like I really want to do this for a job. And my adult life has been a lot of figuring out how exactly do I make this my job. And I feel like I've been somewhat successful at doing that.
Why do you think you yourself took it more seriously? And what made your short films originally more elaborate?
Well, I just had so much fun running around with the camera, and like just shooting stuff. Like it was crazy. Like when we were kids, like we could literally just come up with an idea on the weekend and then just go out and shoot it immediately, and then like stay up all night and edit it. But I always wanted them to get better, and I always wanted people to see them. And I kind of, you know, wanted people to like have like some kind of like emotional resonance with them, or I wanted them to laugh watching it. So I think it was just kind of a matter of like wanting to constantly like get better and have more people see the work. Yeah, I don't know. I just I just kind of like fell in love with the process, I guess. Yeah. You know, it was like, it's like the most fun I think it's like the most fun anyone can really have, like on a job is making movies.
Oh, I completely see what you mean. It's, you know, when it's going right, especially, it's amazing to make films. But when you're with your friends, how is it as a crew? Because obviously friends, you have a laugh, you have a joke. Even when you're serious, it's a different dynamic potentially than working with strangers. So do you have things in concrete? For example, is one person the sound designer, recordist? Is one person the cinematographer? Is one person directing? Or is everybody chipping in doing a bit of everything?
So, I mean, I guess when I was like teenagers, like, you know, none of the people that I was running around with as a teenager, like work in film anymore. Like now after like going to school and then moving to New York, I have like my own circle of friends and everyone I work with. So at least when I was a teenager, there wasn't really any crew. It was basically just, you know, us. And like, we would act in all the parts and like, we didn't run sound. It was all like just sound on the camera. So, you know, these films weren't very good, but, you know, people were always like, you know, willing to be in them. It was, you know, fun and like cool to hang out. But then as you get older, like you have a little bit more responsibilities and like actually like being on set, is a little more difficult. So I guess like I was always like kind of helming like the camera and the story, but then like, you know, people would pitch in. You know, here and there, just in regards to like, you know, the script and just like different like things we needed. So I guess it was always a collaborative effort, but you know, as a teenager, you know, just being like the crazy film kid I was, I was always like kind of helming it, and everyone else just kind of pitched in where they could. But as I've gotten older, you know, that's completely changed. Like we run everything like a set now, and I'm friends with people that, you know, all take on like different jobs on set. And so there's sort of like a market of favors almost, where like we're all kind of constantly like hiring each other. And then when we have like a passion project come up, or like something that, you know, doesn't really pay as much, but like we really care about and it's going to be a lot of fun, you know, then we can kind of reach out to each other and be like, hey, like I'm doing this thing, or I'm a part of this thing. Like they're looking for XYZ. There's not a lot of money, but will you do it anyways? I promise it'll be a lot of fun. And most of the time it is a lot of fun, and it's always like, you know, it's like getting the gang back together.
You know, it's so good to have those people you can connect with when you want to do passion projects, rather than being kind of like isolated and having to hire people new and fresh that are going to cost you so much more money potentially. And they might not be personally invested in your idea in the same way people that you already work with and are established with would. So what was the first project you worked on when you got to New York?
I kind of had like a weird, like coming to New York story. So I'm trying to remember specifically, because I think like one of the first jobs I was on was actually like a big union show. I was just a day player, and it was like the biggest set I'd ever been on. And I was kind of just thrust into it, and that was crazy. But I was just on there for one day. So I guess like the next project I was on, it was this Netflix movie called Lost Girls.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah. I was just on it for a day, but that was like, I'd lived in New York for like 3 days, and then I just like got a call that like they really needed crew for some days they were doing, and I still hadn't like worked on a set that big, so I felt like I wasn't really helpful. But you know, it's just on a set that big, it's a lot of like wrangling cables and just moving things around.
I see.
Did
you get a credit?
I don't know. I actually, I fell asleep during the movie. It was only okay. So I slept through the credits. I think I did, at least probably as like an additional lamp operator. But yeah, so two weeks roughly about moving to New York, I was able to camera assist on like the episode of like just like some like web series. But on that is where I met two gentlemen that I actually work with a lot, and then through them they brought me onto other projects, and I met other people, and then kind of like my circle of friends and crew that I work with in New York just kind of grew from that, really. You know, which is really exciting. Like sometimes you're just in the right place at the right time, and then you you meet the right person, and you know, you guys hit it off. The funny thing is, I was driving the two gentlemen to set, and you know, it was a small shoot. It was just like, you know, gaffer, DP, camera assistant, and then like a couple other like production folks were just going to be there. We're all named Steve. Huh. And so it was a car full of like three Steves, and like we're pretty much the whole crew. And I was like, so like Steve, who else is on the crew? And they're like, well, you're pretty much looking at them. Like, oh, okay. And it's all Steves. Great. This is not going to get confusing at all.
But did you enjoy that shoot?
Yeah, it was fun. It was weird. You know, it was like sometimes like, you know, a shoot is like just a job, and like you're not very like emotionally attached to it, but like you really like the people you're working with. So in that regards, it's fun. But in regards to like the story and the shoot itself, it's just kind of like whatever. I don't even remember the name of it. Like I guess you kind of get to a certain point where like you work on like so many different shoots that some of them just kind of like blur together. But like there are like a few that like really stick out that like you remember as like, you know, being a great experience and like a great project you're really happy to be a part of. This is not it, but I did meet some really great people that I love and, you know, have had amazing times working with.
So your showreel, which I really, really love, is that your work from New York, or is that some of your work in Kansas?
So I don't think any of my work from Kansas is in that showreel. You'd have to dig pretty deep down into my Vimeo to find some of the stuff I was making in Kansas. But all that stuff is stuff that I either shot in Boston or New York, because I went to school in Boston. I went to school in Kansas for a little bit, but then I transferred schools to finish in Boston before moving to New York. But yeah, for a time, like when I moved to New York from Boston, I was still kind of like going back to Boston to shoot some of that stuff. But I want to say like, is some of the stuff you see on there is stuff I've made in New York. But some of it, I want to say probably like half of it is Boston and the other half is New York. Okay. If I had to guess.
How long have you been in Boston and New York then? Sorry.
So I moved to Boston in 2015. Yeah. Fall of 2015. But then I moved to New York in fall of 2018. So I've been here for almost 3 years now.
Okay, because it was such a range of shots that I really, really liked, and length of times and different disciplines that went involved with all of those shots from what I saw. And usually, not always, but sometimes people, especially in that period of time you've been in New York and Boston, they don't have enough quality work to put in for a showreel. So I'm guessing you've been pretty consistent. You've been constantly shooting.
If you liked this podcast, share it with friends. Leave a comment in the comment section and hit the subscribe button.
So to be honest, like, I, you know, my website says like I'm a director of photography, but I didn't actually know I wanted to be a DP until I graduated film school.
Okay.
Just because, you know, I was very committed to, you know, being a writer director. But then like, towards like halfway through like my third year of school, I realized, okay, I don't think that this is actually going to work out. Like, I don't think I can actually like make a living in this business, like just trying to pitch myself as a writer director. Like, I have to find something else to fall back on. And I realized like, okay, like, you know, working in like lighting would actually, you know, be a lot of fun. Like, that's interesting. I think that could be really cool. And so I like tried to get on set more in school and like learn lighting, but I still wasn't identifying as like a DP at the time. And so then after I graduated, I still, you know, didn't think I was a cinematographer, but I was like, I shot a lot of my own stuff, and I was like taking on like just different like videography gigs. And then I got a job at a rental house, and I was learning more and more about cameras and lighting. And then I realized like, well, wait a second. I spend all my time just nerding out over cameras and lighting, and like, I love image making. Like, why don't I just like call it what it is? Like, I want to be a cinematographer. And so I think I kind of like switched like right after I graduated film school, and instead of telling people like, no, like I'm a cinematographer, like I want to shoot your projects, you know, just as much as I want to shoot my own. But I felt like doing that, I kind of had to like start it from square one. Like I'd had this like whole, you know, experience, like, you know, going to film school and like making a lot of great friends and connections and meeting people. So that was sort of like a good foundation, but then I kind of had to start over and like build up my, you know, reputation as a cinematographer. And I'm still doing that. It hasn't been very long since I graduated still, but, you know, it's a constant work in progress. But I guess a lot of the stuff you see on my reel has all been like, you know, official projects, but, you know, it's a good mix of like, kind of like more like corporate, like commercial, like videography stuff, like I'm hired to do. So like, it's still like a pretty small crew, but then like some of the stuff on there is like, you know, music videos that, you know, I'm really like excited and happy to be on. And then like, you know, some short films, too, but I guess that's why it's like so varied, is like, I never really kind of like pigeonholed myself into one thing. I was kind of just like taking on like whatever I could and like being very aggressive about like, no, like I want to shoot this. Cause I, you know, I kind of believe like, if you want to be a good director of photography, you have to be able to shoot anything and everything.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know some people market themselves for one particular thing or one particular genre in a sense, but I'm of the belief of, you know, you have to be able to shoot everything. And what I liked about your reel as well is it was a mixture of everything. And I think nowadays, speaking for myself more than anything else, you have to have a reel that can get you as potentially as much work as possible. And I think you showcased enough skills to be hired by a band, a bank to do a corporate video, or, you know, so many short films, so many different other things than that. But I think I'm right by saying that when people go to film school, they all go with the belief that they're going to become a director. And then it gets to the point maybe in this. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off. I'd say not everyone, but most. Okay. Most people. I mean, I think people that go to film school without the intention to become a writer director, they get the tip of my hat. they kind of have the right idea. It's like, yeah, if you want to make a good living in this industry, like just be a technician, be an editor, be a VFX artist, be a sound person. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, sound.
But yeah, it's very, very competitive to get into the directing or even the writing sphere. And it takes a much longer time after film school, unless you're insanely talented and insanely lucky.
Yeah. That's for true. But you've made the move now to become a cinematographer. That's fair. And hopefully you'll be writing and directing in the future, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm always like, you know, writing my own scripts. I probably have like a stack of you know, short scripts about like, yay, hi, like, you know, just buried like in my desk. But I mean, like the writing is just a very kind of like cathartic process for me. Like I just generate so many different ideas, and like, you know, I'm always just kind of like sifting through them. And if I'm convinced an idea is good enough, then I will, you know, actually kind of like go forth and make it. But
nice,
you know, it's just I just love writing, so it's a good kind of like creative relief for me, like outside of work. Like I'm writing for me. I'm not writing to become anything. I'm writing just because I, you know, like my ideas, and I, you know, want to experience the dopamine rush of writing them down.
I know what you mean. So what type of topics do you write?
So one feature I'm writing, I finished the second draft and still kind of like tinkering with the third, is it's actually based on my experience as a teenager running around with my friends, making short films. But it's about these kids running around making horror films, but they decide to make a horror film, kind of like quasi hybrid documentary about, a serial killer in their town, only to later be pursued by that same serial killer. Some of the shorts I've written, I think they all kind of like deal with toxic masculinity in like one shape or form or another, because it's usually like a male lead, you know, either like struggling with something, you know, related to like his father or his community or like his own identity, if I had to just kind of like, you know, paint it with like a broad brush. But you know, in general, I think that those are the same things that I've kind of like grappled with in my like young adult life and like my teenage years. And so like they kind of inevitably, you know, end up in a script somehow. I'm not even like knowingly thinking about it. I just kind of identify that's like a common thread of among the things I write about. So,
I mean, I like to write myself. I wouldn't call myself a writer per se, but I do like to write. I get similar to yourself. Maybe I'm writing for myself. If that, like mm-hmm. you said, that type of thing. But one film I directed last year, it had one of the girls in the car, and she smoked a cigarette. This girl's a cancer. She's got cancer at the time, but it's her last chance to have a big night out. So she's smoking a cigarette, and I would really have loved to have got her head poking out the window, and we see her in the car that's driving down the road, and we see the wind in her hair and everything like that. And that's, you know, I saw that in your opening shot on your reel, which I kind of really liked. Tell us about that shot and how it was and what it was for. Sorry.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I absolutely love that short film that we made. So that was for a director friend of mine. He's a professor at Boston College, and he was my roommate for like a very short time being when I was like in between like moving from Boston to New York. But that short is about a girl who's stuck in the hospital on the night of her prom because she has a cystic fibrosis. And so she sneaks out of the hospital to, you know, go intercept her prom date who took another one of her friends. And like she wants to like have sex like on prom night because that's what, you know, teenagers do. She wants to kind of like transcend that rite of passage because she has this terminal illness. So that shot is the ending of the film, you know, after like her mom has like come to pick her up, and you know, she's kind of having this like last, like, you know, fleeting moment of freedom because, you know, she's terminally ill. She, you know, really only has like a handful of years of her life left. And most of that will probably be spent in the hospital. So, it was a really nice little film. I was really happy to work on it. It was actually kind of a huge like validation for me, actually, to that was my first like narrative film that I worked on, actually.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah. Thank you. So, it was challenging, but it was really cool to, you know, finally put all the pieces together. But that shot, we used a suction cup car rig. So we shot on the A7. Yeah, we shot on the A7S2. So, you know, pretty small camera.
Yeah.
But it was the right camera for the job. You know, like you don't want to be like lugging around like, you know, too heavy of a camera. If you got to be like quick and nimble, which, you know, we had to do. But yeah, we used a suction cup car rig and just, you know, rigged it out like right there. There's like a little light, like, you know, kind of in the car, like giving her a little bit of a, you know, feel right there. So we just like drove down the highway, got that shot. And, you know, that's the ending frame of the film.
Have you thought of upgrading your cinematography game? Would you like to have an ASC cinematographer mentor you for free? Join veteran cinematographer Suki Medenzovic, ASC, Disney, Pixar, FX Networks, Netflix, American Horror Story, as he teaches you how to create beautiful images using three lighting techniques he has mastered on film sets over his 30-plus years in the film industry. Each technique uses basic, low-cost lighting equipment so that anyone can achieve beautiful visuals no matter your project's budget. If you want to take your cinematography to the next level, visit filmmakingconversations.com to sign up for instant access.
Nice ones. I know that A7S2 is really good in low light.
So
What lens did you use for that shot?
We shot the film on Leica Rs a half glimmer glass. That was kind of like our lens stock camera of choice. So I was really happy with the look it gave us. I think it, you know, it was the nostalgic yet like, you know, sort of dreamy coming of age story look we wanted to go for.
It's funny you mentioned that she was in the hospital, because this is unbelievable coincidence, because in the film I mentioned the girl in the car in the film I directed, she escaped the hospital.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, to get in the car and drive off and go to the nightclub. Not quite a prom situation, but a night out in the club and stuff. But the hospital you shot, that scene and that was really nice. You know, you got a nice hospital bed and everything looked really impressive in terms of how it looked. But was that actually in a hospital, or did you have the budget and the creativity that would allow you to make it look as convincing as it did?
So it was almost in a hospital. So like I said, the director is a Boston College professor, and Boston College is a big school. And so they actually have like a some kind of medical building where they have like a hospital type room, like for classes and stuff. And so we were able to get the permissions to film in there, and, you know, it looks kind of like a hospital, and there's this hospital bed and this room that looks like a hospital room. But you know, it's on a college, it's just for training. So, but we filmed there in the summer when there's no classes in session. So we were able to get in there pretty easily.
Oh, and I'm glad to hear that, because it makes a difference. It made it, you know,
yeah,
from the what potentially could have been the alternative. So ultimately you've done this film. Did you get the results you wanted? I know you said it's like your first and a lovely project, but at the end of shooting something, we always think, did we get what we wanted? Is that the best we could have done? How do you feel about the end of result from that film?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy with it. I think it looks great. The things I would have done differently is just, I just wish I knew like lighting a little bit better. You know, like I think that there are like some things like I did that I like didn't actually kind of like craft the look that was in my head. But sort of like when I realized this, I kind of wanted to like lean into the weirdness a little bit. And, you know, me and the director kind of, you know, established like it's okay if like things like look a little off, or if like, you know, everything like is a little weird. Like, you know, like there's like one shot, like she's in the parking garage, and like we just like put the camera like on the ground and like, you know, panned over like with her. And like even like shots like of like the kids in the car. You know, we decided like let's just like lean into the weirdness of this a little bit. And so you know, that was actually like kind of a fun exercise. But you know, if I had done it differently, I think like I just wish like my lighting not knowledge and prowess at the time was a little better than it probably is now. I think I would have probably been like using a little bit more like fixtures and like blocking and like kind of like shaping the light with a little bit more knowledge than I had at the time.
That's fair. I think a lot of the times after shooting something, we always go back and think, with the knowledge I have now, how would that look and why would it look different than it might be? And also shooting still objects like beer, for example. I really loved what you did with that. I mean, some of the hardest things I find to do is shoot still objects. I remember one job I had, and it was for a shopping channel, and they wanted me to shoot earrings and you know, things like that. And I thought, oh, this is not as easy as I thought. I don't know why. It's just not the same. Since then, I've gone on to learn a few things from another DP called Jeff Boyle. He's done was doing commercials for 30 years. So shooting beer, what was that like, those cans of beer, and what was that scenario like for you?
So I think you're referencing the Lord Hobo brewing commercials I did. And that actually is kind of like what started me getting a little bit more into like the kind of like commercial and like corporate space a little bit. And that's actually like a very like long, but I think it's like kind of a cool story. So if you don't mind me kind of like indulging in like what happened.
Please do.
A friend of mine was shooting a music video for like a directing class, and I was just gonna help him out as the gaffer. So I met up at his place in Fenway, which is like the, you know, sports, like Boston, like Fenway Park baseball stadium's like right down the street from him. And so we met up and like we kind of like went over like a lighting plan and everything, like, and then after we left this place to like just go to a bar, like, you know, get some food and beers. But it was game night, so there was a bunch of like, you know, drunk baseball fans out. So we like sat down at a table, and this woman comes in like right after we like get our beers, and she slams her hands on our table and it's like, "Yo, why aren't you drinking Lord Hobo?" And I was like, "Well, funny enough, I was drinking a Lord Hobo beer," and I told her, and she's like, "Oh, what? Hell yeah, I'm gonna go buy you another." So
wow.
We were like, "What?" And yeah, then this woman came back with like another round of beers and sat down instead of talking to us. And she told us she was the brand manager for this like pretty popular craft brewery, like in the Boston area. And was like, "Yeah, like I'm the new marketing manager. Like I'm trying to hire like photographers and creatives and designers and filmmakers, like all to create art for, you know, the brand." And, you know, my friend and I immediately perked up and we like started pitching ourselves, and we were like, "Oh, like we're right. filmmakers, we're directors, we're DPs. Like you should work with us." And she's like, "Okay, yeah, cool. So we sent her a follow-up email and didn't hear anything back. And then we sent her another follow-up email. I actually ran into her again at the after party for a film festival. My friend had a film playing at this festival. So I went and I met her again at the after party. And I was like, "Hey, like we should still work together." And she's like, yeah, and I'll send you an email. Still didn't hear anything back. And oh, and so like, yeah, but I kind of took it upon myself because I was like really down about it, actually. I don't know why, but I was like really upset. And I was like, "Okay, well, like, all right, realistically, like what would I have shot? Like, because, you know, so many beer commercials are just like slow motion beer pouring. Like those are the money shots, right? But like, I could do that, but like, so could anyone else. Like, how can I like put my spin on it? Like, what would I have shot?" And so I came up with this idea where this like guy approaches these like two dudes just like drinking like, you know, just, you know, regular like light beer, like on their deck. And he goes up to them and says, "Yo, why aren't you drinking Lord Hobo?" And I kind of just made that into like a very tight, like 30-second spot. I shot it like, you know, just with a couple friends, like, you know, one Sunday evening with like just some camera gear I got from work. And so I made this like very tight, very clean, like commercial looking spot, just, you know, completely on my own.
Oh.
And like I redubbed all the audio too. So like it sounded clean and professional. And I sent it to them and I was like, "Hey, I was just thinking like, what would I have I made? Like, had we actually like ended up working together? Like, what do you guys think of this?" And they loved it. And they asked to share it on their social media, and I got like a ton of views, and I was really excited. And I had people messaging me being like, "Dude, like, that's so cool. Like, I can't believe you like actually like, you know, shot for Lord Hobo. That's sick." And I was like, "Yeah, I was actually legitimately hired by them to shoot this thing for a lot of money." not really. But yeah, like that was cool. And like, it started to kind of like get the ball rolling, you know, a little bit now that I had this like sort of like recognizable, brand, like within the area, even if it was just spec work. And then about a year later, they actually reached out to me to shoot, a real thing. You know, they had a little bit of a budget. It was like $1,000, which is like not much at all, but I like really wanted to do it. And so like I did it, and they didn't even end up releasing it. And I was like really bummed about that. So yeah. I still, that was like kind of my short, like, you know, period of like working with them. And like, I don't know, I get it. It's like, you know, so many like marketing plans, like just kind of like change paths like all of a sudden. And it's like, if you guys are like gonna like throw money at this just to like not use it, like, okay. But I don't know, it's just a job at a certain point. But you know, that like spec was really cool. And I guess it was not so much about like the slow motion like beer pouring shots. Like, yeah, like those are like difficult to get, but you know, you just kind of keep doing it over and over again. Yeah. Until like you just kind of like get it right. It's more kind of about like the story and everything that's like happening around that, like, you know, money shot.
That commercial that I watched was a spec.
Yes, probably. Wow. So there's the beer spec one I did, and then there was the real one they hired me for. The real one, quote unquote, is the one we shot like in the brewery. And then the other one, like that's like outside, is the spec one I shot. That was just like my house.
Okay, I see. That's such a shame they didn't use it. But before I say that, before I get into why they may or may not have used it, it says a lot about you to have done that spec. So congratulations, because a lot of people,
thank you,
myself included, I would have been like, you know, really fed up about that. I mean, she wants to do it. Your email, you see her in person and it doesn't happen. So, you know, well done to pick yourself up and say, I'm going to make a spec and send it to them. And luckily a lot of people watched it, and hey, they may not have used the one that you did afterwards. But you know, the experience, and it's on your reel, and it's more quality work that you can show off. But did they give you any particular reason why they didn't use it, or did you not investigate?
So I have a theory, because I asked, and I asked, and what they said was it had to get approved by the CEO, which like makes sense. These things have to go through a CEO process. But the deck I was given is so at the time there was a Super Bowl commercial where like Miller Lite and like Budweiser were going at it for like using like corn syrup and like rice in their beers. And I think like Budweiser, like one or the other, was like, oh, we don't use rice in our beer, we use barley, and we don't use corn syrup in our beer. I don't know, it's all just like light beer, it's all not very good. But it serves a purpose. And so they were kind of trying to do a spin on that, like beef or whatever, about like, okay, like, yeah, well, these guys are like using corn syrup or rice, like in their beers, like, you know, we're just going to keep, you know, brewing with the best, fucking grains in the world. And so they, their whole thing was they wanted to drop the F bomb a whole bunch.
Oh.
And so we have like text come up on screen, and it's like F, and then the rest of it is like, you know, kind of just like blurred out. So best F in grains. And we say the F bomb like 5-6 times in like 30 seconds. Cause that was like the whole pitch they gave us, is like, use the best effing grains, make the best effing beer. Cheers to the best effing grains in the world. So, and I think it's because like their whole pitch was like, yeah, best effing this, best effing that. And so my theory is like, okay, like we dropped the F bomb like way too many times in this 30-second spot. Because that's what they wanted. That's what they, you know, they told me to go out and get. And like, it was just a voiceover. Like we could have cut out like where they say effing, but I think that like once the CEO saw it, he was probably like, we can't like say the F bomb like this many times in like 30 seconds, especially if this is going like on the web. So that's my theory, but I mean, like, it would have been hilarious. Are you kidding me? Like,
yeah, I'm surprised they didn't give it a go at least, you know. Sorry to hear that. To be honest, I didn't even really know much about grains. That, you know, I've been to the Brooklyn Brewery and had a good time there. And I've drunk Miller Lite, and we hardly sell it in London now.
Yeah. But,
I didn't know grains were important. I never heard of it, but it looks like there's some sort of war there.
Yeah. Manufactured war. But yeah, it's all about the grains, really. And so like they get your grains from Germany and Denmark, and you're in good shape. Or Belgium. Belgium too is another great place that you get their grains. I learned so.
Belgium, I was there last year as well, and their beers are usually quite strong. They're too strong for me.
Yeah,
blow my head up, you know. So I can't really drink them that much. But what are you working on now?
I mean, like I said, like when we met, I just started working for a London-based production company. And they just opened a New York office. So they're kind of like, it's kind of like working at like a startup, really. It's like, you know, the team is like slowly growing. Projects are kind of like slowly coming in. I'm kind of just like helping them get started. I am like helping them build the team, like, you know, referring them to, you know, crew for shoots, doing a bit of editing here and there, like helping them like, you know, kit out the space because they want to own all their gear. So I'm kind of like helping them like with what to buy, and you know, just kind of like helping them get their sea legs, really. That's like a lot of like corporate stuff at the moment. We've got like some like more like kind of like commercial and like kind of more like cinematic looking stuff in the pipeline, hopefully. But that's taking up a majority of my time right now. And so like, I don't really have any like passion projects, like in the pipeline at the moment, but I'm hoping that'll change. Like as I, you know, kind of start to settle into this job a little bit more. But I have a music video I shot and directed coming out, sometime next month. I don't remember the date exactly. I think we're still kind of trying to figure that out, but that'll be coming out, in a couple weeks. And yeah, just kind of helping this company, grow.
Thanks so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Great speaking to you about your experience and explaining to be part of your reel, which again is a really, really great reel. And I hope to speak to you soon.
Yeah, of course, man. Thank you so much. I think, like last word, I think like for anyone starting out to, you know, watch this, you know, podcast, maybe, well, I listen to this podcast, I should say, you know, just keep making stuff, and eventually, like you'll pave your own way. Like that's the only advice I can give, is just keep making things, and like eventually, like you'll start to get your sea legs, and like the ball will start rolling. It feels like pushing a boulder up a hill at times, but it's you know, success is kind of like an upward spiral. It feels like you're running in circles, but the circles are slowly like kind of ascending.
Wise words. He's not wrong. He's not wrong at all.